Welcome to Intuitive Transformations with your host, Sylvia Henderson, and discover tools, wisdom, and inspiration that will empower you to transform your life. Sylvia is an intuitive life coach and energy healer with a growing practice that is focused on empowering others to be more of who they want to be. For the next hour, join Sylvia and explore and unravel anything in the way of you creating the life that you would love to live on the Om Times Radio Network.
Well, hello and welcome to the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show, where you will find tools that you can use to change and transform your life right here on the Om Times Radio Network, the voice of consciousness at omtimes.com, every Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern. This is Sylvia Henderson, your host, and I am an intuitive life coach and an energy healer in Kirkland, Washington. If you would like to learn more about me and the work that I do, please feel free to visit my website at intuitivetransformations.net. That is intuitivetransformations.net. Well, today is Thursday, December 1st, 2016. Wow, I don't know about you, but this year has just flown by, and what a year this has been. 2016 has been an incredibly intense year. Lots of change, lots of confusion, lots of challenges. And it just feels to me like everyone is completely overwhelmed and exhausted after this year. As I mentioned in my last show, I really want to invite you to send healing light and positive intentions to our planet and ask that the divine healing pure light of unconditional love be brought to the planet and all of humanity during your meditation times and your prayer times. We are facing some serious heavy energies, and it's going to take all of us to wake up in order for positive, life-affirming change to happen on the planet. And history has shown us that crisis and adversity always creates tremendous change. Our planet right now is entering into a one-year, and in numerology, 2017 is the first year of a brand new nine-year cycle. We just finished a nine-year in 2016 as we're coming to the close here. And so with this new year on the horizon, what humanity chooses to create in 2017 is going to set the stage for the next 8 years that follow. Now, I know I can almost feel you groaning out there when you consider and ponder that, but we can choose to focus on doom and gloom, or we can choose to focus on what else is possible and really start asking ourselves how we can contribute to bringing more love, compassion, and unity to the planet in our own unique way. Because humanity is waking up to the truth that there is only one race on the planet, and that is the human race, and we have a choice as to whether we want that awakening to be a rude awakening or a gentle awakening, we every day need to make a choice, and we need to choose consciously and do our own inner homework. And what I mean by that is start asking yourself, what can you do to bring more good into the world? And then give whenever you see the need, if you have the ability to meet that need. Be the light that you are, that you truly are, and shine that light brightly. Release your judgments of yourself and other people, because it's our judgments that paint the perceptions of our reality. And also, really learn to choose forgiveness and release old grudges, because unforgiveness will hold you captive, it keeps you stuck in your life, and it really locks up your energy when it comes to creating something brand new. When we forgive, we set ourselves free. As an intelligent society and as the human race, we must make high vibrational choices for ourselves and for the planet. So today we are going to talk about something that everyone can do, and that is stepping into the energy of heart-centered giving. There is something that magically happens within each of us when we give from an open hand and an open heart. You can give your love, your attention, your time, your energy, and yes, you can give financially if that is within your comfort level. I have Jenny Santee joining us today to talk about the life-changing power of giving and how you can give your way to happiness. Let me tell you a little bit about Jenny before I bring her on. Jenny Santee is a philanthropy advisor to some of the world's most generous philanthropists and celebrity activists. In 2013, she founded Saint & Partners, which is a consulting practice that has served clients, including signatories of the Buffett, Gates Giving Pledge, an Academy Award-winning actress, and leading financial institutions in Europe and Asia, helping them channel their wealth, power, and search for meaning towards social good. Previously, she served as head of UBS's award-winning philanthropy services department based in Southeast Asia. Jenny Santee holds an MBA from INSEAD, attended the Wharton School and New York University's Heyman Center for Philanthropy and Fundraising, and is a chartered advisor in philanthropy. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, Time Magazine, Psychology Today, and Big Think, among others. Jenny Santee is passionate about helping people discover how to give their time, their talents, and their treasures in ways that not only change the world, but also bring happiness and fulfillment to their own lives. Jenny Santee, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sylvia. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's definitely a pleasure. And I'm so excited to be able to have this discussion about giving because as we are in the month of December, it's traditionally known as the season of giving. So how appropriate to really put some focus and emphasis on what giving is all about. So Jenny, you found your dream job in a field that you didn't even know existed. How did that happen for you? And can you tell us about your dream job?
Oh, yes. Well, it all started for me in the winter of 2007 after a six-month job hunt after I went to do my MBA. And I was very depressed and insecure about my career prospects. But what ended up happening is that I landed this dream job in a field that I did not even know existed, philanthropy advisory. And it happened when a bank that manages the accounts of half the world's billionaires invited me to join their team of in-house philanthropy advisors. And then I began my unusual career of advising extraordinarily wealthy people on their charitable activities. And, you know, at that time it felt like the most exciting thing to ever happen to my life. And to this day, almost every week I get random requests from people wanting to hear about how I landed this position that they perceive to be about telling rich people how to give their money away. Well, you know, the job had some aspects of that, but as with any job, it was definitely not nearly as glamorous as people would imagine. But what was really wonderful about this job and what has been really amazing about this job is that it constantly exposes me to the deep trenches of the philanthropy world, a world where I meet a lot of people helping other people. And I realize it's a world full of happy, fulfilled philanthropists, social entrepreneurs, nonprofit leaders, activists, young students, volunteers, and many other idealistic people who give life to the idea that, you know, have you heard that saying by Winston Churchill that we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give? And so I've seen this day by day, that not everyone I meet has a lot of money to give away, but they teach me that giving is not just for the rich, and oftentimes those who do not have that much give even more of their time, their talents and their lives to something that matters deeply to them.
Yeah, I agree. And I really love how you are explaining this, because I think when people first hear about philanthropists or millionaires and billionaires giving large sums of money, they quickly go into kind of a judgment of that category of our population that, oh yeah, they can give. Of course, they have so much excess. They don't need it all, and they get a tax deduction. But this is not what you have found to be true. There really is something that they are getting out of this that brings them a lot of joy.
Absolutely. But you know what? The flip side is also true. While in this world I learned that giving makes people feel good and fulfilled, I've also learned that giving doesn't always feel great. And I've felt that in my own giving, in my own volunteerism, in my own work as well. Let me just share with you something I learned when I was researching for this book. There is a place deep down in the middle of France, and it's called Plum Village. It's a quiet, monastic community. Have you heard of this place? It's a quiet, monastic community started by the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. Mm-hmm. And in this village that's run mostly by monks and nuns, lay people are welcome to enter and join the Buddhist practice to retreat from the pressures of the outside world. And when I met a monk who has spent a lot of time in Plum Village, I asked him, what types of people go there? And I imagined, oh, maybe there's a whole lot of stressed out bankers, disillusioned hippie types, and maybe heartbroken women. And he said, yes, all that, we find all that. But he said something else that truly surprised me. He said that every year, among the thousands of people who go to Plum Village, the majority are people who do work in the social sector. And they go to Plum Village because they are burnt out by having given so much. Hmm. And indeed, I've seen over and over again that donors get disenchanted, and charity work can be wearisome sometimes.
And that is so true as well. When we return after the break, we'll continue our conversation on giving with Jenny Santee. Please stay tuned. There is so much more to come.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I did the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hello, everyone. This is Sylvia Henderson with my guest, Jenny Santee. She is a philanthropy advisor, and she is also the author, I can't believe I didn't say this sooner, Jenny, the author of a brand new book called The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And I love that Deepak Chopra wrote the foreword of this book, and it's a wonderful collection of stories, and we're going to dig into this a little deeper as we continue in the show. But before we went to the break, Jenny, you were just sharing a conversation you had with someone regarding Plum Village, which is a beautiful monastery village that's located in France. and that many people go there. And many people that go there are burnt out from overgiving, are feeling depleted from their giving.
Yes, and I've seen over and over again that donors get disenchanted from their philanthropy work. Charity work can be wearisome, and activists who are so dedicated to different causes get burnt out by their own activism. And for a lot of us, getting solicited all the time, it gets annoying at some point, right? So all these beg the question, how can we give of ourselves in a way that not only makes the world a better place, but also makes us fulfilled and happy?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And so what is it about giving then that does bring us pleasure? And is it that our brains are actually hardwired to give and serve others?
Well, yes. It's not just a bunch of inspirational sayings that prove that now. I mean, there's so many sayings that say there's joy in giving. In fact, there's a beautiful Chinese proverb that I like to quote, and it goes like this: if you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a month, get married. If you want happiness for a year, inherit a fortune. And if you want happiness for a lifetime, help somebody and give. Mm.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So go on, Sylvia.
No, so in your book, you actually offer some solid science that there is research that proves that there's a reason we feel good when we give.
Yes, yes. And one very fascinating bit of information that I came across in my research about the science behind the joy of giving is that now through modern technology, we know that when we look at a brain scan, an fMRI scan, that there are parts of the brain that light up when we volunteer, when we give, when we do good deeds. And guess what? These are exactly the same parts of the brain that light up in response to food, in response to thoughts of sex. You know, these are the pleasure centers of the brain.
Wow, that's amazing. So really, this releases endorphins within the body, and it does kind of give you a high when you have made someone's day by contributing in a way that's truly appreciated.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure you've heard of the runner's high, right? The euphoric feeling we experience when we go for a run. Athletes talk about feeling really good after a strenuous workout. So I've also come across the helper's high. The helper's high, which is the euphoric feeling we experience when we help others. And we feel powerful physical sensations, we feel energized, we feel this built-in reward system that nature gives us whenever we help others. And another thing I've come across is a study from Carnegie Mellon University that shows that volunteering for about 4 hours a week dramatically lowers blood pressure in older adults. So every day we're learning more and more about negative lifestyle factors like poor diet, smoking, lack of exercise, sitting around. You know, all these negative lifestyle factors increase mm-hmm. our risk of hypertension, heart disease, etc. But what about positive lifestyle factors? What positive things can we do to actually improve our health? And it turns out that volunteer work could actually reduce disease risk. So this is something that all of us can do, not just to make the world a better place, but also improve our health.
There is really something amazing when we feel that we're valued for our contributions, and volunteer work is such a beautiful place for us to explore and experience that. I find that fascinating that it actually has lowered blood pressure in older adults when they volunteer their time. And, you know, it's a self-fulfilling reward system that's built within us.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of voluntarism, because we might not all have the same amount of money to give, but we all have the same 365 days a year. We all have the same 24 hours a day, and we can all give some of our time towards helping others.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So what kind of giving makes people the happiest? Is it the volunteering, or is it the monetary donations, or is it just being present with someone when they're going through a tough time? I mean, what kind of giving makes people the happiest?
Well, let's talk first about what makes people fed up with giving. You know, this whole idea of donor fatigue, right? Because I'm sure you've come across this term, donor fatigue.
It's more like, you know, burnout, because I'm overgiving is what I hear more than anything.
Yes. That burnout because you feel like you're giving so much, or there's another thing. It's called compassion fatigue, when we become desensitized to images we see in the media, images of people suffering, children starving, the environment, disaster. And we just become immune to that because either we think we've done our part, or we think, oh gosh, it happens far too often, that we just tune out. We tune out to protect ourselves. But what I learned about these phenomena, donor fatigue, for example, donor fatigue doesn't happen because we've gone broke. It's hardly ever the case. Rather, the biggest reason for donor fatigue is that a person's generosity is not well matched to his or her passion. If you think about it, there's so many different causes out there where we can give our time, where we can give our money, and all of them deserve help. It's not like any of them are bad. Maybe some are better run than others, but all the different causes, whether it's AIDS, whether it's the environment, cancer, animal welfare, LGBT rights, etc., all of these causes deserve attention and deserve funding. However, what are we going to do? Are we going to spread ourselves thin and support them all? I mean, what we should do is to really start with our passion. You make our passion the starting point for our giving.
That really does bring a lot of clarity to where we choose to contribute. So this donor fatigue really happens because we've spread ourselves too thin then? Is that what you're saying? That we've tried to solve all the world's problems with one wide stroke?
Well, that's one thing. But we all start out that way. We all start out by giving to a wide range of causes. Maybe we give a little to something because our friend asked us to do this. Maybe we give something because we got something in the mail, etc. So what I hope to see, what I have seen and hope to see more, happen more over time, is that over time we should have a clearer idea of where we really feel like our time, our money is best spent. And that should be where our passion really lies. What are the causes that truly resonate with us? For example, is there something we went through as children that we feel we want to give back to? Maybe we were adopted and we want to help someone who's in the same position. Maybe we were abused and we want to help someone to recover from that painful experience as well. It should be deeply related to who we are as people, what our experiences have been, what makes us tick, and sometimes what ticks us off. When we look at the newspaper and then go through the different pages, what is it that draws our attention the most? What is it that makes us most frustrated? What angers us the most? And that should be related to where we're giving to.
And that's such a great positive antidote to having anger. That's when anger is a catalyst for change versus anger just creates more anger. So I really like looking at it that way. So what is the big difference then between compassion fatigue and donor fatigue?
Well, I think they're very similar. I think compassion fatigue happens when we become desensitized to images that we see in the media. For example, I gave a talk the other day, and it was a very festive event. And since I was talking about philanthropy, I flashed a picture of very emaciated children, very hungry children. And I don't think it dampened down the mood of the party at all. I think we've just seen these things so often that we become desensitized because they're taken out of context. Or we see them all the time. Perhaps we feel helpless. But how we could really feel the connection to these causes, again, is if we think about what are the things that we went through ourselves. And that's going to be different for you and different for me. For example, personally, one thing I've struggled with as a child was my extreme shyness. I was so shy to the point that my classmates thought I was a handicapped deaf mute. And later on, I learned that this condition is called selective mutism. And so right now, I'm actually trying to find other people who are going through the same thing and speaking more openly about my experience. And in the process, I feel like, wow, you know, I feel good to be able to help. And I want to be able to help more people who are going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with other people who, for example, one of my clients, he became very successful and he is truly a billionaire right now. But he had very humble beginnings and he was robbed of the chance at a good education when he was a child. So guess what his main thing is? Right now he supports education because he did not have the same opportunities when he was younger.
So Jenny, let's continue this conversation when we return from the break, because I want people to actually hear what you just said. So when we return from the break, I'll have you finish that story. Everyone, please stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few moments.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hey, let me ask you something. Would you seat your 3-year-old child on a windowsill? Would you seat them beside a lit fireplace or by the deep end of a pool? One last question. Would you seat your child in a car seat that's not correct for them? Car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Secure their future. Seat them in the correct car seat. For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome Welcome back. This is Sylvia Henderson on the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show on OhmTimes.com with my very special guest today, Jenny Santee. She is the author of The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And Jenny, before we, as we were going to the break, you were just sharing a story about a friend of yours. Can you go ahead and recap that story for us, please?
I was just sharing a story about a philanthropist client of mine who has chosen his philanthropic focus based on his very personal experiences. So, for example, all of us are confronted with the fact that there are so many different causes out there that truly deserve our support. And how do we decide which one among them to give our time, our talents, our treasures to? And what I find, what I have found time and time again, is that people derive the greatest sense of fulfillment and happiness from their giving when it's aligned with their personal experiences, with their passion, and sometimes with their pain. For example, this particular person I'm talking about had very humble beginnings and turned out to be a very wealthy man later in his life. But when he was struggling as a child, as a teenager, he had to work, and as a result, he did not have a very good education. And he knows how bad that made him feel. It made him feel very insecure. It made him feel really deprived in many ways. And so when he finally had the resources to give back in a big way, he decided that his focus would be on education.
So going back to what you said earlier about how the compassion fatigue, when we see these images over and over again, and that it is really important to find something that you are passionate about, and that tends to be something from a personal experience. But, you know, so how do, because there are many amazing organizations that are helping individuals who cannot help themselves, who are in really challenging scenarios. Like I think of Humanity Healing, which is really the brainchild. It's a nonprofit. Nonprofit organization, and you just heard about it during the break, and it protects these young children, albino children in Africa, because witch doctors are kidnapping them and literally lopping off parts of their bodies to use them in their rituals, which is really horrific. And so for organizations like that, what they did was they started OhmTimes, and that's, you know, all the funds that come through OhmTimes help to support this nonprofit organization. But yet I've never had a personal experience with that, but yet I have great compassion still. So is it that, you know, is it that we protect ourselves, or we become desensitized, or how can agencies and organizations like Humanity Healing and other agencies that support our, you know, even like what's happening right now in Standing Rock in the United States in North Dakota. How do those organizations where we're seeing this, where we're seeing these images over and over that are not, that make us feel uncomfortable, how do we get people to still connect and not disconnect? Is that possible?
I think that's a great question. And in fact, in my book, The Giving Way to Happiness, I discuss also the implications for fundraisers, for organizations that are seeking support for different causes that unfortunately can make us feel very heavy sometimes, right? Particularly when there are very dire situations involved and really depressing, you know, depressing images. And who wants to deal with that? The reality is that people just want to focus on something light and fun and cheerful. So how do we get around that? And so let me just share some implications for fundraisers. One of the hardest things to do as a fundraiser is to simply listen. Most fundraisers, I realize, want to immediately tell their story. Who are we? What do we need? What does this cost? It needs your support. They want to share the story, share their outcomes, talk about the impact they're making, talk about how crucial this issue is. And the moment they see someone who is a potential donor, some organizations that are raising funds immediately go for the ask. And, you know, there's no doubt that that's a very valuable work, and it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of dedication to be in this kind of career in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But often, the first thing that needs to be done when visiting a prospective donor or meeting someone who can potentially support a cause is to simply keep quiet and just listen. Just ask questions, and amazing things can happen when the person who is fundraising just stays quiet and let the prospective donor do the talking. And this makes the prospective donor's experience more rewarding and meaningful when they ask questions such as, what aspect of our work do you think connects with you the most? What would you like us do if, for example, you were to spend some time with us or give funding to us? You know, what do you think you're most passionate about? Where do you see yourself being more active? Is it this department? Is this what? You know, just ask a few questions rather than insisting that this is what we do and we need funding for this because the children are dying, people are starving, the animals are in need. I mean, that's all true, but also realize that people just want to feel...
You have some fire department around you.
Yeah, these are the sounds of New York City where I'm sitting. It's the soundtrack of the city, isn't it? Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that,
so
I think that's a great idea.
Inspire the people you're in front of, because they also want to be inspired and uplifted rather than just hear about one problem after another. Make them feel that they are empowered to be part of the solution and that it was their choice to be involved and that they were not simply guilt-tripped into it. Because if they were simply guilt-tripped into it, chances are they'll give something. Maybe they'll give a check. Maybe they'll give a one-off, but simply only to get it over with, but not to be a long-term supporter.
You know, that's a really interesting what you've just said is very interesting, because what I feel is the common theme to really having happiness in the giving is that the giver must feel valued, that their contribution is valued. I mean, I have a friend who has started a nonprofit here in the Northwest, and it's a tough subject. It's for children who are, it's a hospice that's gonna be very child-friendly and very vibrant and lively, called Ladybug House. But it's a tough subject because, you know, hearing the stories of parents who have lost their children to cancer, or watching children who are going through chemo, you know, it's something we don't like to talk about, but there's such a need. And so I think that's great advice that you just shared for organizations who support causes for individuals who desperately need support financially and even resources that to really do a beautiful work on the planet in that way and contribute. So with, and we've got about 3 more minutes before we get into the break, so you may not be able to finish the whole thing, but in response to this next question, but with Brexit and the U.S. election and other world events that are happening right now, do you, you know, kind of see any changes in the world on a global level, either positive you know, either of these things having a positive or a negative impact on philanthropic donations at all? Or do you feel that things will stay status quo in terms of how people give, or do you see people pulling back? What are you witnessing?
I think one thing that's been really promising is that the whole zeitgeist nowadays is that it's cool to be good, right? It's like many millennials want a career with social impact, and people are very committed to causes. For example, on social media, people talk about what they care about. People share stories. People comment on issues. And I think there's a lot more involvement and interest. But, you know, I also just want to go back briefly to the point we were discussing earlier. You did mention a point that it's very important that whenever we are active in a cause, that we feel that we are thanked, you know, that we feel that we are appreciated. Just want to say that I'm absolutely not discouraging people from giving to good causes just because they don't cheer us up. I mean, if we only gave to get something back each and every time, then, wow, what a dreadful opportunistic world this would be.
Yeah.
And neither am I saying that we should not be a part of the solution to great problems such as climate change, poverty, diseases. We certainly should. But then there are things we will and should do out of obligation, out of sympathy, purely out of a sense of responsibility and a spirit of public service. But then again, there are ways to give that not only make a difference to the lives of others, but also bring us great joy. And there is a sweet spot where generosity feels organic and makes everyone feel good.
I like that. It's all about that sweet spot where everyone feels generous, because then it's not out of obligation. It's in not coming from a place of should or should not. It really is coming from a heart-centered space. We're going into another break, everyone. We'll be back in just a few moments. And when we return, we'll talk more about the giving way to happiness.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive dedicated community.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and the text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
We're back with Jenny Santi, and Jenny, I have another question for you, and that has to do with giving anonymously or giving publicly. Does that make a difference in our level of happiness?
Well, interesting you asked that, because I reflected upon this as well, and I asked a number of people their thoughts on this, and a lot of us are brought up to believe that we should do all of our giving anonymously, because it's a humble thing to do. It's a more admirable thing to do. But one thing I also learned is that when we are anonymous in our giving, then we don't give ourselves a chance to have direct contact with the people that we are trying to support, the people, the organizations, the causes. And the reality is that one thing that could really make us more fulfilled in our giving is when we give ourselves hands-on opportunities to experience the good that we are doing.
I agree. So can you let everyone know, I can't believe we're in the last segment of the show. This has gone so quickly.
Are we?
Yes. I know. Can you let everyone know how they can get your book and how they can get in touch with you?
Oh, thank you for that opportunity. My book, The Giving Way to Happiness, True Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving, is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, many other leading retailers. And my website is jennysanti.com, and I'm also on Twitter at jennysanti. That's JennySanti.
Wonderful. And so your book has this collection of really some lovely heartwarming stories of examples of giving. And I know one of your favorite stories is also my favorite story, and that's the story of Joshua Williams. Would you mind sharing this young man's story with those who are listening?
Absolutely. I love sharing this story because, you know, even though I'm a philanthropy advisor by profession, most of the time I don't like the word philanthropy because it's so often misunderstood, and not to mention a lot of people can't spell it correctly. And it sounds so elite, and it tends to exclude a lot of people. And most of us don't even consider getting involved in the philanthropy space because, hey, I'm not as rich as Bill Gates, or I'm not Oprah Winfrey. So, you know, it's time we redefine philanthropy, because if we think about the root word of philanthropy, it simply means the love of mankind. And we can all be philanthropists by giving our time, our talents, our treasures to something we care about. And so when I came across Joshua Williams, who I call the philanthro prodigy, because he was so young when he started his charity work. I was so inspired. Joshua was actually just 4 or 5 years old when he had his first experience when sitting in the back of his mother's car. Imagine a little boy strapped into the kiddie seat in the car and calling out to his mother, "Mom, we have to stop the car." You know, they were driving around Florida, and this little boy, Joshua, said, "Mom, we have to stop the car because there's a homeless guy in the street, and I want to help him." So the mother goes, "All right, go on then." And this little boy, Joshua, gave the money that he had as a birthday present from his grandma, and he went out and gave it to the homeless man. And what ended up happening is that every single time they would see someone needy on the street, the little boy would insist, "Mom, we need to do something. Mom, I need some money. I need to help this guy." And it happened so many times that Joshua's family gave him this talk that, "Sorry, Joshua, you can't just keep doing that because there are too many people who need help, and if you keep doing this, you're going to run out," you know, all sorts of excuses. "You're going to run out of money, et cetera." But the little boy decided that, you know, these excuses are not good enough. I mean, he said that if we don't have enough money, then why can't we get our friends to help? Why can't we get our church to help? Why can't I get my school to help? And so to make a long story short, Joshua invited his community, his church, his classmates to all get involved. And at the young age of 5, became the president of the Joshua's Heart Foundation.
And this foundation is still in existence, correct?
It's still in existence, and he's a teenager now, I believe.
And so what? So they're still helping the homeless and giving to those.
They're helping the homeless, doing feeding programs, and what's really wonderful about this. Because, you know, I talk in this book about what giving does, not just to change the world, but to change the life of the giver, right? So I asked Joshua, who was, still just a little boy when I interviewed him. I asked him, "So, Joshua, how has this changed your life?" And he said, I have found my purpose. Can you imagine a little boy telling you that? I mean, here we are all looking for our purpose, and this little boy found it. He said he found it in helping others.
Wow, that is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. I love that story. Love, love, love that story. So, you know, for the everyday reader, who maybe they don't have an extra million dollars laying around somewhere that they can contribute, what kind of giving makes people the happiest?
Well, you know, the key is to find the approach that fits us. And it's easier than you think. It's easier than you think to give your time, your treasures, or talents to something that you care about. And chances are you'll find it tremendously satisfying. It won't cost you a lot of money, and it won't take up so much of your time, but it's going to make your life more interesting. The doors will open up, you'll feel more capable, and incredible things that you never thought could happen to you begin to happen to you. So the key is just to give it a go, because you don't really have anything to lose.
I love that. It's just about stepping out and just doing that. I mean, creating that making that first action step. I mean, there's quite often, you know, because people are struggling, you know, I'll go to the grocery store and there's someone standing there with a sign. And it's, I always try to at least give them a dollar, you know, and so many people, as you said, they just kind of speed by because they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to feel that discomfort of even acknowledging that this is part of our reality in the world sometimes. But it does, it just makes you feel so good, even because, you know, every little bit hurts. It doesn't have to be $100. It can be $20. And it doesn't have to be, you know, find a way that you can give and contribute. I love the idea of volunteering. I think there are so many worthwhile organizations that would love to have someone come in and volunteer their time. And so do you, on your website by any chance, offer any information like that? Or can you point people to you know, open their eyes in terms of what's possible and where they can donate? I mean, I think
There's information on my website. That's jennysanti.com. And I also have a blog on the Huffington Post. So I've written a number of articles on these different topics. And, of course, the book covers these various topics in detail, but how we can give in such a way that's not only intelligent, informed, and impact-oriented, but also really fulfilling in ways that really change our lives as givers. And there are five ways that I've learned how giving truly changes the life of the giver. The first is how giving gives us a sense of purpose that we're all looking for. And the second is how giving gives us a sense of a career that's not just a job, but a calling. And the third is how giving helps us recover from very painful experiences in life, whether it's an illness that we're going through or the loss of a loved one, and how giving helps us when we are able to give to something that we found very painful in our lives. The fourth one is how giving helps us form stronger family bonds and friendships and find love. And finally, it's about how giving gives us a sense of significance beyond material success.
I love that. I love that. Wow, I cannot believe we only have a few more minutes left in the show. And I think you just summed it up so beautifully, Jenny, with those five.
Yeah, I just want to say again what you know what we talked about earlier. Which is to just start by doing something small. It's not going to take up a lot of your time. It's not going to take a lot of your money. Just go out there and do something. But the other time is to also, when you have a moment, just take some time to identify the issue that you want to address and reflect upon your experiences in life. Think about what you care most about, what bothers you the most, what has hurt you the most, and see how can you help in such a way that reflects those experiences of yours. Because if you're truly passionate about something, you're going to be really committed over time. Because what I can tell you is that it's going to be difficult. It's not going to be super happy and fulfilling and fun and cheerful all the time. In fact, that's why we need to give, right? Because some things are very difficult. Some things are really broken in this world, and we need to do our part. But we'll find that when we're deeply connected to something because of our personal experiences, and we find that whole experience of giving, of helping out, also helps ourselves in return.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And you've definitely illustrated this in a wide variety of ways with many examples in your book, The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Jenny, I know we're coming to the end of our hour very soon. I am so very grateful that you took out the time in your day to join us all the way from New York via technology to share the gift of giving in your book and with those who are listening on the show. This is December. It's the season of giving, and we give to our families. We wrap up these presents and gifts, and this is a great opportunity for you to donate some wrapped toys to children who are less fortunate than yours. There's so many opportunities to give this time of the year. Jenny, thank you for joining us. You've been an absolute delight.
Thank you, and Sylvia. It was my pleasure.
Pleasure is mine. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And enjoy this season of giving that we're moving into. And really step within and ask yourself, how can I find ways to give that will bring me more joy? Love to you all. Have a wonderful week until we join again together next Thursday at 2 p.m.